Welcome to today's Association of the United States Army Thought Leader Podcast on artificial intelligence, its implications for the U.S. Army. This is Colonel Retired Dan Roper, AUSA's Director of National Security Studies. I will be serving as your host. To address this complex high-priority initiative, we're fortunate to be joined today by Brigadier General Matt Easley, the first director of the Army Artificial Intelligence Task Force. He's been in that role since September of 2018. General Easley's assignments include Deputy Commanding General Cyber, 335th Signal Command, Chief of Staff, 335th Signal Command Forward in Kuwait, Commander, 505th Theater Tactical Signal Brigade, and Commander of 319th Expeditionary Signal Battalion in Kuwait. A graduate of the United States Military Academy, General Easley has a bachelor's degree in electrical engineering and engineering physics, and master's degrees in electrical engineering from Kansas State University, a master's in computer science from University of Colorado Boulder, and a master's in strategic studies from the U.S. Army War College, and a doctorate in computer science from University of Colorado Boulder. His military education includes Command and General Staff College, the Defense Strategy Course, and the Joint and Coalition Warfighting School. In his civilian career, Dr. Easley is on a leave of absence from his position as a senior engineer for Boeing, specializing in system of systems architecture. General Easley, welcome to today's Thought Leader Podcast.
Great to be here.
To help set a little context for our listeners, would you please describe artificial intelligence and machine learning to help us build for the rest of the conversation?
Great. It's great to be here. Artificial intelligence and machine learning are a lot of the buzzwords that you'll hear throughout the thought sphere of today. It's almost in our zeitgeist. How is AI going to change our jobs? How is AI going to change the nature of warfare? We at the Artificial Intelligence Task Force are really focused on artificial intelligence technologies and how we transition that technologies to the warfighter. For us, artificial intelligence and machine learning are a whole series of technologies that help us automate what normally humans would do. And I think that's kind of the easiest, most succinct definition. Just look at the task that normally required human intelligence to do, and how do we automate that so a machine can either assist a human and do it or instead do it for us. AI's been around us for a long time, and we often don't use those terms. When I first got my PhD more than 20 years ago, we were kind of an AI winner, so we didn't use that term. And I didn't, when I went out to pitch projects, I didn't use the term artificial intelligence. We would use the term for decision aids or intelligent data analysis instead of artificial intelligence. There's actually been three waves of artificial intelligence before. So there's waves that started way back in the 50s and 60s where they were using AI to play simple games from tic-tac-toe to checkers, eventually chess. A lot of those initial systems didn't do very well because they didn't have the computation. The software was difficult to code. A lot of the rules were coded by hand and were difficult to change and maintain. Over time, we've evolved those technologies. So now we can use either a lot of graph-based systems or statistical-based systems to encode this knowledge. And a lot of these systems you don't even realize are out there that we're using. So for example, a lot of our mapping algorithms are all based upon a grid that we define our world by. And that allows a computer algorithm to search through that grid to find paths to go for. So if you're trying to get to work in the morning, or if you're trying to find an airline, or trying to find a bus, it's following a grid. There's other examples of statistical learning where we'll use to stock market analysts will monitor the stock market. We'll have image recognition systems where they'll look and try to identify is this a cat or a dog from the image. Cardiologists, radiologists, lots of medical systems are using these statistical-based systems to try to identify tumors or cancer cells. Finally, there's a lot of future work in AI as well. A lot of the AI systems aren't intelligent like the standpoint that we are. They don't have contextual understanding of what's happening. When they identify an apple on an image, they don't understand that an apple is edible, for example. Their apple is typically red or green and is not purple. Those type of contextual systems that you and I take for granted, these systems don't understand. And that's what a lot of the AI research is going forward in.
Could you tell us about your organization, the Army Artificial Intelligence Task Force, and some of the initial successes you've had since Dr. Esper presided over your opening ceremony last year?
So the Artificial Intelligence Task Force had an Army directive that stood us up in October 2018, but it just stood us up with a directive and a small handful of people. So we've been growing that team over the course of last year, securing initial funding for our projects, as well as starting good new work. We were given a number of projects to start on. We're given a number of areas to focus on and an organization to do that. Organizational-wise, our organization is based in at the National Robotics Engineering Center at Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh. So there we have a team of data scientists, engineers, and contracting specialists to help us work through kind of AI issues. And we're funding select research projects there through our artificial intelligence hub to understand how we can push the ball forward faster to do AI, artificial intelligence research, and turn those research projects actually into products. We've got a number of key initiatives that we're just started out on our direction. So we're looking at object recognition technology from overhead imagery. We're working with mobile cooperative sensors. So how do we get multiple sensors, multiple robots, multiple drone vehicles working together to identify targets in a main battle area? We're working on a predictive maintenance project with the Joint AI Center over the 860 helicopters. And finally, we understand one of the priorities of the Army is people first. The Chief of Staff talks about talent, our talent management key. So we have a couple of talent management projects as well on working with Human Resources Command on how to do better assignment, officer assignments, and looking through the data to create those systems. The projects aren't enough. We need to do more than just a couple AI projects. We need to build infrastructure so we can help the rest of the Army do its own AI projects. If you open up any magazine today, or especially any business magazine or science magazine, there are always one or two or maybe a whole issue on artificial intelligence. And we know artificial intelligence is going to affect every area of the Army. It's going to affect every program office, every major command, every schoolhouse. So it's important that we establish infrastructure capabilities across the Army to help them do it better. We don't want 50 different point solutions. We want an Army way to do it, at least an Army way that will make it easy for soldiers and our civilians and our contracted workforce to be able to do it for in a unified way, as opposed to going out to 50 different organizations, coming up with 50 different tool sets and having to maintain those different tools, train those different tools, and defend those different tools on the network.
What are the high-level overarching documents that the Army is doing? Like, could you talk about the AI strategy? Well, you've talked about some elements of it, but just the strategy itself.
So there's a whole series of strategic documents that got us to where we are today in the Army. The National Defense Authorization Act of 2018 kind of highlighted why the Department of Defense needed to do AI. It was an initiative both at the DoD level and at the Army level. Mr. Dana Deasy, the DoD CIO, more than a year ago in the summer of 2018, decided to establish a Joint AI Center. And the Joint AI Center developed based upon the NDAA, established the Department of Defense's AI strategy. Part of that strategy was to establish a Joint AI Center here in the Washington, D.C. area. Again, to do a number of key AI projects, again, to show the Department of Defense how to do AI projects, as well as to work policy of how to do AI across the Department of Defense, and then to do AI infrastructure. So again, to help us use cloud-based infrastructure, use similar tools across the Department of Defense so we can learn from what the Navy is doing, what the Air Force is doing, what the intelligence community is doing, and even learn from the rest of the federal government, from Homeland Security and the Government Services Administration, from a whole series of lessons learned from across those agencies can influence how the Army does its AI. So now brings in the Army AI Task Force. So we come into this ecosystem and we see all these documents. And from that, we develop Army AI strategy. And this year we're developing the Army Implementation Plan. In that strategy, we talk about a number of lines of efforts. One of those lines of efforts, the first one, develop our kind of key capabilities and our requirements for future systems. I talked about a little bit earlier. So those capabilities are kind of our signature project that we were given. And then future projects, how do we want to create the mechanism to define which AI projects we're going to get the best return on our investment for? As you could well imagine, every program office, every agency within the Army will start using AI technologies over the next few years. So helping prioritize the Army in those initiatives is really important to help strategic leaders understand what they should be investing in and what they should be not investing in. A next part of the strategy is our AI culture and our AI talent. We know we need to grow the workforce. I've done a lot of just web searches looking at a number of the job sites for a lot of the big internet companies, and the number of artificial intelligence, data science, cloud engineers that they're hiring to do this work is staggering. We know we'll need to outsource some of that work to a contractor workforce, but we know more importantly, just like a lot of the internet companies are, that they have to grow that talent themselves. So that second line of effort is about that talent management and growing the workforce and the culture to do this work. It's not just, again, understanding that we need to go out and buy these super AI researchers. AI is so pervasive that involves everyone across our society and our workforce. So we need policymakers to help make better AI policy. We need data scientists and our experts to help come up with new algorithms. But we also need AI technicians to understand, as we're gathering data, as we do our day-to-day jobs, is how do we get that data in a way that's useful to the organization? And this becomes critically important as our mechanics do predictive maintenance, as our human personnel specialists work on personnel or pay problems, that they input their data well and they input it in a system where a machine can then learn from those systems. You see a lot of successes from online banking systems to ride-sharing systems. There's an entire system architecture that people are using to feed that data. So that kind of leads into our third line of effort, is the infrastructure. So we need infrastructure to do these systems. If you look at a modern cell phone, it's a whole ecosystem in your handheld there. So there's an operating system there. There's connections to the web. There's ways to put applications on that device. We need to create ways to do that within the Army. So within our enterprise systems and even our warfighting systems. So we have a soldier go out on the battlefield. How can they get maintenance data off a whole series of vehicles quickly and efficiently, and then put that into a cloud-based infrastructure where a machine can then learn on it and update a model and then push that knowledge back out to the edge. And then finally, we need to understand kind of our AI policy. How do we want to use these tools on the network? Right now, it's really difficult for soldiers to code on our network. We have strong, because we need strong cybersecurity policies, but we need to update those policies slightly so we can allow our soldiers to control both their data, the models, and the code that evolve these AI systems, as well as how do we share data. You've probably heard a lot about the why data is so important for artificial intelligence systems. We need to be able to create processes where data is shareable as well as protected. Obviously, there's certain data we can't share very much because of our privacy concerns, but there's a lot of data that we can share. And there's a lot of data we need to learn how to gather better. A lot of our battlefield data, if you look at our soldiers driving around in a Humvee today, it's really difficult to gather data from their day-to-day operations. As opposed to in our civilian society, it's pretty easy, or we've engineered a system where we can get data from a truck driver as they drive vehicles around the cities, or the state of our subways, or the state of our road systems, or the state of the weather, because we've created platforms for that data to be gathered and shared. We have to create that ecosystem within the Army, at least in some areas of the Army, especially in our warfighting systems, for us to be able to fight the wars we're going to need to be prepared to fight in the future.
Building on that last line of effort you described, could you talk about how the Army AI strategy links to the other information technology modernization strategies, such as the Army's data strategy and its cloud migration strategy?
So I'll kind of, again, start at the top level. So we'll start at the Department of Defense level. So the DOD CIO, Mr. Dana Deasy, has four modernization kind of IT or information technology infrastructure modernization priorities. Those are the cloud, artificial intelligence, cybersecurity, and the network. And those all actually are not separate, distinct things. We use, if you think of all the great technologies we use today, from recording a podcast to any of our online systems, they actually all use all four of those things together. So the technology is in the cloud, we get the data from the network, we're defending it, and then we're using some type of analytics or artificial intelligence to help us monitor that. So that was the framework that the DOD CIO established about a year and a half ago. At the Army level, again, we've taken that to heart and we've said, well, how is the Army going to implement this strategy for the Department of Defense? And we have a number of associated documents. So the Army CAO G6 has just stood up its cloud enterprise office under Paul Puckett, and he's kind of leading the charge of how to create this cloud infrastructure. We also have just announced an Army Chief Data Officer. Mr. Greg Garcia is leading the charge on our data strategy, on how we're going to align our data. We've learned through doing a lot of our AI projects that both cloud and data are critical to make these systems scale. For example, in our predictive maintenance work that we've been doing with the Joint AI Center, we look at the H-60 helicopter as a great joint helicopter. But a lot of the maintenance terms that the different mechanics across the services use to talk about fault conditions on an engine are slightly different terms. And we have to align those terms so we understand that this fault condition on the engine is the same between a Navy mechanic and an Army mechanic. And this is why data and data standardization is important, so that we understand that when we put in some type of data record, a date of birth or a street address that we're using a consistent lexicon for that. So when it gets pushed up to the machine, it's just much easier and we have to do a lot less editing. And that's why a data strategy is important. Another part of that data strategy is making sure that data is available. Again, I talked earlier about how do we share this data. It's really good for an organization to only have one record of all our people, that we know that there is one General Easley and that when General Easley retires, they know that General Easley is now retired. We don't have to go into 10 different databases and mark that down. We can talk about that from our personnel systems to our vehicle systems to our training readiness systems. So it's important that that data behind the scenes gets rectified and made more consistent. And this is what the data strategy is trying to do. For AI, this is important because we want to be able to learn from that data and then automate decisions based upon that data. The other big key categories are kind of cloud migration strategy. There's a big push both from the Department of Defense and from the Secretary of the Army saying, get to the cloud, get to the cloud. And the cloud offers a lot of built-in security features, and a lot of availability features for the data. So we can push our data in the cloud. It just makes much of the AI systems and much of our decision-making systems easier. For the cloud migration, AI in the Army, I think, is even more important than it is for other services because of the distributed nature of the Army. We have camp posts and stations in dozens of countries, at least. If you look at the number of installations we have across the United States, National Guard and Army Reserve units, obviously, in all 50 states and the three territories, all of them are generating data, and that data's got to be pushed somewhere. When we deploy forward, we go to forward locations. Again, we want to get that data from there and get it somewhere where a decision maker make a decision on it. Cloud infrastructure makes that much easier, especially with a lot of modern technology. Obviously, there's network involved as we deploy forward, so there's a lot of interplay that cloud infrastructure has to do with the network to make this work.
That's a good segue for helping to explain why AI is essential to the Army's new warfighting construct, multi-domain operations.
Oh, great question. Love to talk about multi-domain operations. Highly recommend to listen to General Wesley's podcast on this same organization. A great thought leader in this area. Multi-domain operations involves a lot of pieces from the kind of the competition phase that we're in our day-to-day just non-warfighting state to starting conflict and then where we want to go in to disintegrate our enemy capabilities. But one of the key concepts of multi-domain operations is concept of convergence, is how do we get warfighting capabilities at the right place in the right time? We've been fighting the air-land battle doctrine since before I was even a cadet. It's been around. We started doing the thought experiments for that doctrine. I just post the Vietnam War in the mid-70s. We evolved those doctrines during the 80s. We showed how effective that doctrine is with the First Gulf War. And we've been fighting that doctrine well over the last, obviously, 30-plus years. But a lot of the systems that we put into the air-land battle doctrine, we can share data between our systems, but where a lot of the sharing of data between our systems is often done still with a human in the loop. And rightly so. We're fighting our wars and we want to be able to know what our target is and that we're engaging the right targets. But with multi-domain operations, we know that speed is going to increase and we have to have machines help us make decisions faster. We want machines to help us look at an enemy or a potential battlefield and look for targets there and help identify those targets to a human decision maker faster. So for example, instead of having one tank gunner look out as his or her main tank site with a tank commander scanning the battlefield, we can have a series of other sensors supporting them. Those sensors could be either organic on the platform, they could be off platform, but a similar modality like a electro-optical sensor from a drone flying around in front of the formation, or it could be from one of the other domains. It could be from the cyber domain or from space where we're bringing in other information and getting that information down to the operator fast. And this is where we think AI is going to be a big factor. In the same way that a lot of the ride-sharing companies and a lot of the systems that distribute our goods and services around are using AI to understand where are the needs, who needs resources right now, and where are they coming from. If you think of a lot of the ride-sharing services, that's what they're using it for. So you have people providing ride-share services and people needing rides, and artificial intelligence helps align those two systems together. We can see very analogous technologies helping make battlefield decisions. So we can get requests in for logistics supplies to do resupply on the battlefield. So who needs water, who needs food, who needs fuel, who needs ammunition resupply, and finding ways to distribute that system so our systems are more survivable using artificial intelligence so we know how to route the goods and services to the needs faster. We can think similarly on how we want to make decisions about how we're going to employ our weapon system. So we're going to look out and say, okay, here's a whole series of engagements that are potentially possible. The machine can help figure out which one will get the best return on our combat capabilities in those scenarios.
Digging a little bit deeper into that on MDO, why are system of systems architecture so critical to AI systems in general and then MDO specifically?
Another great question. Thank you. So for a lot of the systems that we think about as kind of our army systems, so we'll think of our platform base. Think of a lot of our modern army modernization priorities from Future Vertical Lift to the next generation combat vehicle to air and missile defense systems. A lot of those systems are built on a platform. So if you think of our legacy system from a Bradley fighting vehicle to an Abrams tank, they have a whole bunch of systems designed to work well with that system. What we want to be able to do in multi-domain operations is to be able to share data between those systems even better than we could in airland battle, and to share that data not just in the air domain, but in all domains. So how do we understand the cyberspace? How do we understand information warfare? How do we understand air and potential sea effects all in one larger system? And that's why a system of systems architecture is so critical. So we need to be able to share everything from personnel data to logistics data to targeting data. Every aspect of all our battlefield mission areas all need to be able to share this data. So we know what the main effort is right now or today or tomorrow, so we can plan those logistics activities. But to be able to do that, we have to be able to share that information. That information needs to be shared over a system of systems. And this is why a system of systems architecture will be so critical to make these systems go fast. So we know where our vulnerabilities are, where our strong points are, and we can adjust our battlefield laydown based upon those in a much faster way than our old warfighting systems could do. And having systems architectures across the cross-functional teams, but also across our battlefield operating systems, or all the mission areas from, again, our warfighting systems to our support systems.
Moving on to another one of the chiefs and secretary's top priorities is Army modernization specifically. So what role is AI playing in the Army modernization priorities and the cross-functional teams that support it?
The cross-functional teams are all under Army Futures Command, and Army Futures Command is kind of the lead organization for the Army Modernization Enterprise. We work closely with the Army staff, with the Army Major Commands, and with ASALT to work those prioritization and the prioritization efforts. With our organization, we have the Army AI Task Force, the Army Application Lab, and then the 8 cross-functional teams all supporting these modernization priorities. For the Army AI Task Force, we're working closely with each of the cross-functional teams to help identify some of their AI needs and where they want to go. So for example, with Future Vertical Lift, they want to have air vehicles to support our vertical lift fleets. So how much autonomy do we need to put into those wingmen to support the aircraft? Are they going to be fully autonomous or fully remotely piloted? There's a whole spectrum of technology for all these autonomous systems, from air vehicles to ground vehicles. So we work with a lot of the cross-functional teams in those areas specifically on how can we make those systems a little bit more automatic, a little bit more intelligent in those systems. It goes beyond that. We're also looking at how do we maintain these systems? All these systems need maintenance data, or how do we create consistent data behind those to help do predictive maintenance on each of these areas? Other areas, we know each of the systems is going to have some type of target identification capability. So on our next generation combat vehicles, there'll be a new third-gen FLIR or some other kind of a main engagement system. How are we going to get AI technology into that site so that can help the operator there identify targets better? But we have the same kind of issues in our Future Vertical Lift systems. You can imagine we have the same type even in the IVAS goggles, the integrated visual augmentation systems that PEO Soldier and the Soldier Lethality CFT is purchasing. We'll have similar kind of image recognition technologies built into the goggles. Again, we want to be able to gather data off those systems, train models, again, to help do object recognition, detection and recognition, again, to be able to then make these systems faster to support our warfighter and make our soldiers safer and more lethal.
For the Army to be successful in its modernization initiatives, it obviously has to work extremely closely with its industry partners. Could you describe specifically the partnerships that you're involved in with industry and academia, and how the AI task force and the Army more largely can leverage their expertise?
So thank you again for another great question. So the primary organization the Army AI task force is using is the Army AI Hub. So we've created an AI hub, effectively. It's not a full consortium yet, but it has a a lot of analogies to a consortium of a number of leading AI universities across the country. And we use that as kind of the center of our ecosystem at the National Robotics Engineering Center to bring in both academic researchers and industry specialists to kind of understand the AI state of the art. So we look at different technologies, we look at research projects from across academia, and then we try to match those with Army problems. So we'll bring in, again, we've brought in the cross-functional teams, we're bringing in other kind of areas from across the Army for ISR systems and medical systems, and again, trying to align that technology with technology needs from the Army to technology providers, either from industry or academia.
How does that relate to the concept of AI engineering?
AI engineering is a concept that's starting to be established in some of the academic research areas. For a lot of its history, AI has been kind of thought of as research, and this is something that people go to research and study in. But what's happening now as the field matures is starting to become more of an engineering field and less of a science and research field. As I spoke at the beginning of my talk, I talk about kind of the different waves of AI technology. A lot of the earlier waves of technology, the technology is so mature now that we don't even think of it as kind of artificial intelligence. We just assume that we're going to have a mapping system that's going to help us move from A to B. We're even starting to assume that our voice recognition systems is going to understand our voice and we're going to be able to do voice to text. That those systems are going to be almost natural. So the AI engineering part is how do we take these well-established technologies now and then get them consistently and repeatably into our capabilities. So example, we'll use one of the second wave technologies, which is natural language processing. When we do natural language processing, we want to be able to do that kind of consistently across the Army enterprise so that if a next generation combat vehicle is taking a voice command from a soldier inside the vehicle, that's kind of the same technology. So a future vertical lift system may be using, or a medium range SHORAD system would be using, when a soldier's in a command post, so that we have a certain baseline of technology to grow upon as an Army enterprise. We can think of that from our natural language processing to our image recognition technology. So for example, we have an image of a picture, we want to be able to differentiate between tanks and cars in the image. So how can we do that, again, consistently across platforms so we can learn from one sensor and use that same technology in another sensor? So we don't have to start from scratch as we train each of these systems. And if you look at a lot of the technology that's coming in our cell phones, we do that. If you're taking a picture with a camera from vendor A, then you take another picture from camera from vendor B, we know how to share those pictures between them because there's standards and technologies that help do that transfer. And then we need those same kind of technologies to be able to share data on our battlefield systems. For the engineering, it also kind of shows that the field is an engineering field, that to do AI, we need to understand we're going to architect a system. We understand how an algorithm evolves, how an algorithm is trained, how an algorithm is maintained, and all the pieces that come in into creating a working system. Just like other engineering fields do the same thing for a building or for an airplane. And that's why the concept of AI engineering is critical as we mature the field going forward.
Excellent. We've got a couple wrap-up questions for you that are not so technical in nature, but more back to what the Army's all about, its soldiers and its leaders. And they're questions that each could invoke a PhD dissertation. I don't think we've got that much time to do it, so I'll ask you to briefly highlight your thoughts on, first of all, do AI systems change the ethics of warfare?
AI systems shouldn't change the ethic of warfare. Warfare, we've had rules of war that have been evolved over centuries, and that we've created those systems for a reason. We don't want to use disproportional amounts of violence when we don't need to. We need to be able to understand what a legitimate target is and what a non-legitimate target is. We have to have this concept of discrimination on the battlefield so we can know where our systems are looking at and shooting at. What has changed with AI systems is that we have to understand, as we're designing these systems, we have to make sure we keep the commanders and the soldiers or the airmen in the loop to be able to employ these systems. So there'll be times when AI systems could be on a fully autonomous mode. We have those systems today. If you look at some of the systems we do for counter-battery fire or for defending a carrier battle group, there are times when it's appropriate that you can put the system into a fully autonomous mode and knows when it sees an incoming cruise missile or when it sees an incoming artillery round, the system knows how to respond appropriately and in a safe manner against those potential threats. As we build more and more AI systems, especially when we build those systems for land warfare, we have to make sure those same safeguards are built into the system from the beginning. And this is why a system engineering approach is critical as we design the systems. We think through how was a potential soldier going to use these systems, and that as we design those systems, as we make these systems more intelligent, we say, okay, these are legitimate bounds for use. So the concept of scaled autonomy is really important as we develop these systems. So we can know that when we're going into an engagement and we have a high probability that this is a lethality zone in our battlefield, where we know that the chance of having civilians in the area are slim, we can have it in a more autonomous system. But when we're in other circumstances, we know that guarantee is not there, we'll have a much less autonomous system, a much more soldier in the loop. This concept of scaled autonomy and designing the systems with scaled autonomy up front is kind of key for their use. Some of the other key aspects of the ethical use of AI has to do with, you'll hear on the modern press, is just how do we protect the privacy of soldiers, the privacy of our data. Again, we have lots of safeguards built into a lot of our personnel systems, either from our personal data or our health data, to maintain that. As we gather more battlefield situational data, we'll have to find the right balance of security and sharing that data to move forward. Again, in the battlefield situation, it's not so much about personal privacy, it's more about how do we defend our knowledge and our systems from our adversaries. But as you said, there's lots of research questions here. And one of the great things, we've had an ethicist on our team for the last year who's really helped us think hard through these questions, as well as help from across the Army. So Army War College has lots of ideas on this in this area, as well as the Judge Advocate General Corps.
Differing somewhat from its sister services, the Army does not so much man its equipment as much as it equips the man or equips the woman. Any concerns that AI reverses the balance in this relationship?
As I started my talk, we talked a little about the strengths and where AI has done really well over the last decade or more. But as I said, a lot of the AI systems just don't have the context that we humans do when we go into a situation. And especially for land warfare, where you're walking into an unknown situation and you don't know what's there, the person in the loop is going to be critical for years to come. We may have a remotely piloted ground vehicle out there, but there'll still be a person seeing the feed from that vehicle, kind of understanding what that system is doing. And this is where I think the Army is kind of at the forefront of these technologies, with how do we integrate this technology with the soldier and how do we work forward? And this is, I think, a lot of the great work our cross-functional teams do as they're designing these new systems, and where the AI task force kind of helps them and thinks through some of the use cases and where AI technology is both today and where AI technology will be in the next 5 or 10 years and where that could be insertion points into those systems. But understanding how to do that with a person in the loop, understanding how to make these decisions faster and better, but not replace the human decision maker is a key part.
Excellent. That's a great note for us to end on. Thank you, General Easley, for being with us today and for sharing your insights and experiences on an initiative so important to our nation's defense. We look forward to keeping apprised of the great work being done by the Army Intelligence Task Force.
Again, I want to thank AUSA for inviting me to speak today. It's always an honor to speak to the Army's Professional Association about the great ideas of today. I look forward to continuing these ongoing discussions with AUSA as we move forward. Thank you.
To all our listeners, thanks for joining us. Be sure to subscribe to the Army Matters podcast on iTunes and everywhere podcasts are found. Join us next Monday with a brand new episode of Army Matters with Thought Leaders. The Army Matters podcast series is brought to you by the Association of the United States Army, the U.S. Army's professional association, member-supported, Army-connected. Visit us at AUSA.org for more information or to become a member. Your membership helps AUSA continue to carry out its mission to educate, inform, and connect with the total Army, our industry partners, and our supporters of a strong national defense. For questions or to provide topic recommendations, email us at podcast@AUSA.org. Have a great Army Day. Hooah.